And now, here's Marlena.
Well, hello there. We do have some crazy people who start out this show. I don't know where they come from. When I was a little kid, I used to think they lived in the phonograph needle, but I don't have a phonograph needle. I don't know where all those people came from. Welcome to the Marlena program. It is a kind of gray Sunday here in Seattle, and we've got a great program lined up for you tonight. In the second hour, we will be in open forum, and as we usually do, and so we'll be taking your calls about anything and everything and anything besides all of that. But in the first hour, we have what I think is probably going to be one of the most interesting shows we've done in a while. I've known about these two folks, Sylvie Cashton and Robbie Barnes, for quite some time. They run a program here in Seattle called the Kaizen Program for New English Learners with Visual Limitations. And at first blush, you think, well, what is so different about working with people learning English as a second language who are also visually impaired? And then you really think about that question. And that's what our guests are going to talk about tonight. We'll open the phone lines in just a bit, but first help me make welcome Sylvie and Robbie. Welcome to Marlena.
Very nice to be here.
Yes, thank you for letting us be on. I will say that I have a cold and I may have to stop and blow my nose periodically. I hope not.
As long as you don't mind if I stop and cough periodically. I too have a cold and I also have asthma. So this is a show where coughing and sneezing happen on a regular basis. So not to worry. Tell me a little bit about the Kaizen program. First of all, how does Kaizen get its name?
First of all, it's pronounced Kaizen.
Ah, Kaizen.
Kaizen, and it's a Japanese word that means continuous improvement. And, it got its name from one of our founders, Doug Hilde, who was also very involved with the ACB and the Washington Council of the Blind. And it's just a nice phrase that we use for part of our name, and we are dedicated to continuous improvement both for our students and for the whole program.
And are you both people who are visually impaired?
Yeah, I am partially sighted and I use large print, and Sylvie is totally blind and uses Braille.
And how long has the Kaizen program been going on?
Well, we had been teaching English as a new language to fully sighted immigrants and refugees since 1988. And in 1997, Doug Hilde asked us to help some of his students, his clients. He was working as a rehabilitation counselor at the Department of Services for the Blind in Washington State. And his students were having problems because going into the mainstream classroom, they were facing a context where those teachers were working from books with pictures. They were also drawing pictures on the board and doing a lot of gestures. The way English as a new language is taught, it's generally taught very visually, although it doesn't have to be. And a lot of people, no matter how intelligent they are, can find that to be a really big challenge. And most of the students, particularly beginners, were finding it to be a challenge. There's a lot of problems, and recently we were speaking with a person from the Louis Braille Institute here in Washington State who told us that her organization had been approached by the mainstream teachers in one of the community colleges and asked to adapt a book and tell them how to teach new English learners. And although her program is very capable of teaching children who are blind and have low vision, because of not knowing how to teach new English learners, and also because of, not knowing some of the basic methods that can be used that go beyond vision in that field, they weren't able to help. So the reason that we were able to help is number one, both of us have been trained. Robbie has a master's in education with a specialization in teaching English as a new language. I have taught before in contexts where there are a lot of new English learners, and I have over 200 hours of methods training workshops behind me. And then we have the experience with the fully sighted students where we had to adapt things for ourselves and to make it possible for us to work fruitfully with fully sighted students. So we had a lot of good ideas about how to work with people who cannot see. And from all of that, that isn't necessarily available to people either who know about new, teaching English as a new language but don't know about blind people, or to people who know about teaching blind people but don't know how to teach new English learners.
So you can actually sort of serve as a bridge to helping the service providers provide better services and more appropriate services with an understanding of how some of the difficulties. The thing that I think about a lot as I think about what Kaizen does is the cultural nuances that are so visual that we as blind people are told as we grow up, you know, how you cut your meat, how you hold your fork, how you do just sort of the day-to-day living things, which if you come from a different culture may be very different. Do you all work with that as well with your students?
Well, what we teach is English as a new language and orientation to North American culture. We understand that's an issue, and our students are very acutely aware of the fact that the culture can be different, and that's part of what needs to be done, and that's part of what happens to a certain extent in the mainstream classroom, but not a lot, because the assumption is that the fully sighted immigrants and refugees can watch people in other contexts, whereas our students can't.
Yeah.
Although fully sighted students have problems too. Fully sighted immigrants and refugees, when they go into a supermarket, many times they don't recognize those packages as food.
Yeah,
if they don't come from a culture where there's, you know, so there's a lot of things like that, you know, also. But over the years also we have developed a lot of nuances and ideas because, for example, since 1997, we have served something like 30 students on our, you know, and in 1998 is when we formed Kaizen, which is a very small nonprofit, and Doug Hilde encouraged us to do that, and he's been one of our big supporters. Doug Hilde, for the people who don't know him outside of Washington State, is very active in all sorts of advocacy, and he's not only helped us, but he's also developed a program for outdoor activities, including horseback riding, which some of our students have participated in. And he was very concerned that we have something that could be ongoing. So over the years, we've served about 30 students, some for short periods, some for long periods. And in 2004, we only served 7 students. In 2005, we served 5 directly so far. But what we have been doing, as you indicated, Marlena, is we've also been trying to give consultation and training to various service providers.
Let me just say that the line is open, 866-666-7926, if you'd like to call and speak with Sylvie or Robbie of the Kaizen Institute. No, sorry. See, I don't know.
Kaizen,
you know,
program.
I don't know where I got this institute thing, you know? It's like it's going to be an institute, whether I...
it's
golly.
A mouthful.
Well, yeah, but somehow I renamed
you. You can say Kaizen.
You. Okay. Thank you.
That's what, and you can thank Doug. It means continuous improvement, and it's Doug Hilde's brainchild, so he gets full credit.
Now, can you share with me some stories some of your success stories, people who started in the program, who, you know, I as a journalist, am always interested in hearing the drama of the thing. You know, have you any students who, when they came to you, were really quite lost and whom you really changed their lives by doing what you do?
In some respects, I think they're all successes. Some of them are more spectacular than others. We have one student who didn't read or write at all before coming to this country. So English is not only a new language, but it's the first language that he's learned to write and read in.
Oh, my.
He's using Braille. And other students have been very literate, even college graduates in their own countries before they came here. And we've just helped them, you know, make adaptations of their own to learn English and to learn English with Braille or using large print.
I will tell you one story about a man who was college educated and was very technically inclined, could see fully, lost his vision in his 30s. He had a wife and three children. His wife left him after he lost his vision. She didn't want to live with a blind man. He basically thought his life was over, but he did raise his three children, and he did take care of his two parents until they died. When he was finally able to come to the United States, he mainly came with the hope of having a future for his three sons. And when we first met him, in doing the language assessment, which is one of the things we do, Robbie showed him an umbrella, put an umbrella in his hands, he cannot see. And he said to us through an interpreter, through his brother-in-law, oh, this is an umbrella. I don't know the word in English, but this is an umbrella. This is something I will never use because I will never go out again by myself. Now he can speak English quite a lot, and he goes out by himself everywhere.
That's fabulous.
Well, I mean, he goes to places with his family, too.
That's fabulous.
But he can travel independently.
He is an independent traveler, no question.
And we have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello there. You're with Marlena and Robbie and Sylvie. Who's this?
Good evening. This is Joe Hartz from Michigan.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
I'm just doing wonderful. What an important topic.
Yes.
What a great resource.
Isn't it a wonderful resource?
And I do have some specific questions, but I'd like to take one moment of personal privilege to say that I know Sylvie from a few listservs, and she's a wonderful advocate, not only in this current field, but for all people with disabilities, and puts out a tremendous amount of information, factual information, related to threats to the Social Security system. And I greatly appreciate her efforts in those regards.
Ah, there you go. Great.
Well, thank you, Joe. I think Joe Harsh puts out a lot of good information, too.
Well, we're big fans of each other, but a couple of years ago, did my practicum at the Michigan Commission for the Blind Training Center as a rehab teacher of the blind. And ironically, a few years before that, having lost my sight slowly to RP and never having a residential training, was a student there. Also an activist on the Consumer Involvement Council until recently with the Michigan Commission for the Blind. We have a tremendous influx of immigrants who happen to be blind, particularly from the Middle East. Several students were range from countries from Palestine to Lebanon to Iraq. We have the largest center of people of Middle Eastern heritage outside the Middle East itself in Southeast Michigan.
Really?
Yes, in Dearborn area and around the Detroit area. Tremendous population centers there. Also a very large Hispanic community and growing, both statewide and in particular locales. I was very intrigued about the cultural issues, and I saw some changes directly after the impact of 9/11. And I was also interested if, off-list, if you could send me some resources, Sylvie, you have my email, related to some of the work that you do for the Michigan Commission for the Blind, because we do have a cultural diversity panel. It is a tremendous problem in serving people with particularly, again, with the Arab background and with the Hispanic background. So any information that you could send me would be a great resource, because we don't want to leave these people behind as well. And I'll listen for your comments there.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
I will make a few comments. One of the comments that I will make is that we are getting increasing numbers of requests for assistance, and that one of the things that is concerning us is in the beginning we did some of it volunteer, but it's getting harder and harder. I will send Joe something, but it's getting harder and harder for us to do it on a volunteer basis. The first, in 2001, the first year that we kept track of it, we got 10 requests for assistance of this sort, and then Robbie has the other figures, but I know, but by 2004 we had 53 requests, and now we have, who knows, we haven't finished counting this year. I don't know, Robbie.
It's probably over 60 by now.
Yeah.
Because more and more they're asking us for that same kind of information that Joe needs there, too.
Yeah, and so one,
so we need to do that in addition to working directly with students.
And one of the things that we're hoping, that we're beginning to ask for, is for some funding, either donations from individual or from groups or people fundraising to help us so that we can do this work, because it's becoming less realistic for us to be able to do it on a simple voluntary basis. And some of it really should be done with training, because we can tell people a little bit about how to do it, but some of the best things that we can do is train people. And that I'll tell you a little bit about how we do that later, you know, in a little while, in terms of the fact that we have trained professionals and we've trained volunteer tutors in this area in our joint project with the mainstream program, St. James ESL. We'll go into that, but I will say, just real quickly, the issues around people from different cultures are complex, but the main thing with respect to working with those people is developing relationships of trust, which can sometimes be done with family members and with interpreters, but it has to be worked on. But, for example, I will tell you this, and this is not, like, going to be sure for every situation, but I am a woman. I am 62 years old, so I'm an older woman, and a lot of people feel more comfortable with an older woman than they might with a lot of other people, for example, with a young woman if they're a young guy, but than a young guy if they're a younger woman. But anyway, I have worked with men as well as women from Middle Eastern countries, from Afghanistan and some other countries, as well as some Muslim countries in East Africa. And after explaining to them that we're going to do some touching and things like that that they might not usually do with women in their culture, the response I have generally got is, well, this is a different situation. You're a teacher, you're like a sister, and we're all blind. I have not had any problem. The kind of touching we do is I'm going to touch their hand and say, hand, this is your hand, this is your left hand, this is your right hand, this is your left foot, this is your right foot. I try to be aware, in some cultures you shouldn't touch the bottom of a person's foot, in some cultures you shouldn't touch the top of their head, and I try to be aware of that, and we can talk about that. But we do a lot of what's called total physical response, and then we do a lot of tactile experience, particularly for beginning students. And that can be a cultural issue, but neither Robbie or I, you know, have had a lot of trouble with that, although we have always been cautious and let students know what was going on.
Well, and again, you know, when you're working with people who are blind or visually impaired, that that tactual, touching, teaching experience is critical.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure how you could go about doing what you do without doing that.
No, what I could do if I were doing it and it was a man who did not want to be touched, I would ask Robbie if he could, you know, ask if he could touch or something. We would have to do it in some way. And it's not always the best to do it with an interpreter because the interpreter often is not clear on what we want unless they're also blind. And even then, if they haven't taught English as a new language, they're going to be confused. So it's the third person, you know, it wouldn't necessarily work well. But we have not had problems, but we have worked on developing trust. And I think this is why I use the phrase orientation to American culture. We don't want them to necessarily change their culture, but we want them to learn about the new culture. And then they can decide for themselves how much of the new culture they will adopt and how much of their own culture they will continue to demonstrate in this society. You know, so that, in all of these cases, the issue is, what does the person want to do? And that's part of what we do when we do our language assessment. We also do goals assessment. And what possibilities does the person have? Are they going to be trying for a job eventually? So do they want to learn that kind of thing? Do they need to learn the English necessary for learning mobility skills? Because we are not mobility teachers, but we know how to teach the kind of language communication necessary for mobility skills. We have had students who've learned mobility with interpreters, and they have told us later that they found it both stressful and confusing.
Sorry, we're having some technical issues here, but keep on going. I've gotten everything that you've just said. No, we're fine. We're simulcasting into a chat room, and for some reason the chat room keeps popping in and out on me. So, let me ask you, and forgive me if I've asked you this already. Does either of you speak another language?
We both speak a little bit of several other languages, but and it's a very common question that people ask us, you know, how can you teach all those languages? But in fact, we usually ignore what we know of the other languages. We really need to get the new students, the new English learners, to start relying on English much more than, you know what I mean, just then as a bridge. So we basically work with interpreters for people who know absolutely no English. And then part of our lessons is to introduce the basic vocabularies of how to talk in English with, you know, your basic kind of sentences and situations that people are in. And then we build on that. So we have worked with people from China, Vietnam, Somalia, Afghanistan,
Russia,
Eastern Europe, many different places that we don't know a bit of the language.
But for example, I'm going to say to an interpreter, which could be a family member, and that's another thing, the skill of working with an interpreter is something we had to develop, because when you work with fully sighted students, you don't usually have the interpreter available most of the time, and you just do other things. We do a lot more one-to-one kind of stuff. As a matter of fact, most of our work is one-to-one rather than classes because particularly for beginners, they really need it, but even intermediate students need it. So I'm going to say to an interpreter, now I'm going to tell you that this is the first time that we're doing this, that when I pass this ball to you, then I'm going to say something. I'm going to say, how are you? And then you're going to try and repeat after me, and we'll go around and do these different things, these different little exercises. Or I'm going to show you what I'm doing. I'm putting the book on the table, and I'm going to say the book is on the table, and then I'm going to put the book under the table, and I'm going to say that. And you try to repeat after me, and we'll play little games. And if you can't repeat, it's okay. We'll get to it. You know, just keep on going, and It's not a test. It's just going to be until it becomes a habit. We want to develop habits.
We work with patterns, too. If you always do things in a similar way, then the student gets to understand what
sure.
to expect the next
sure.
thing.
And
sure.
most of the time we are not working with the interpreters, just the very beginning so the student knows what's going on.
Well, and, you know, I think I can kind of relate to what you're saying here because I have a keen interest in people who are deafblind. And I have for many, 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 many years. And when I was a young girl, I learned the fingerspelling alphabet and made two friends who were deafblind. And, you know, you're a kid and you have all these foolish things that you say that, you know, as an adult now you look back, you say, holy smokes, I would think that was funny. You know, you think or, you know, something, some foolishness that a young teenage kid in the 60s would say. And, and I remember having this great desire to teach my new two deafblind friends some of these expressions, and I was just shocked, embarrassed, horrified when one day one of them walked up to her attendant, who is now my age, which is 56, and said to her, "Mrs. Cook, you're a fink," and she and of course she thought that this was yeah, she thought it was the right thing to do because I would hug her and I'd say, "Hi, you fink, how are you?" So she thought, well, of course, boy, did I get in trouble.
Yeah, this is the whole thing about context, and we have had to learn to clean up our language working with students.
Yeah, we also almost totally avoid idioms. Mm. You know, we use them when necessary, the basic ones like watch out or look out, something like that. But most slang we never use. And when people ask us about different slang words, we say we always give them an idea about where it's okay to use a word or a phrase.
Yeah.
One of the classic examples is if somebody compliments you on your clothes, you shouldn't say, "I dress to kill." Even though somebody else might describe them that way. But that is a problem. There are lots of problems. But I want to comment on what you said because it reminded me of a little conversation that I had a few months ago. And that is, when I was younger, I could see some, and I actually started out fully sighted and I lost vision little by little over time. And when I was in high school, as many people who are visually impaired or blind, I was exposed to the biography of Helen Keller.
Sure.
And at the time, I really felt appalled by the idea that all blind people would be identified with a person who is deafblind and really, you know, living a life that was not as independent as my life at the time. But recently, in the last year or so, I read the letters and biography and some of the other things that were posted on the website of the American Foundation for the Blind. And I was struck by how similar a lot of the methods we use are to the methods that were used to teach her. And the truth of it is that there's a lot that we can all learn, and actually a lot that fully sighted students can learn by interacting with things. And that, you know, it's not true that you have to be able to see to understand things. Those of us who have seen maybe, you know, have memories or whatever that we can do some interpreting of some kinds of things. But the truth of it is that this particular culture is too hooked on the idea.
Absolutely.
That vision is it. And that, and the matter of fact, there's a lot of brain research now that shows that people who have tactile experiences can remember things, long-term memory, better.
Well, we have a call. Let's bring the caller in. Hi there. You're with Robbie, Sylvie, and Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, this is Dave in Visalia, California.
Hey there, Dave.
And I'm just, while you were talking about the Fink episode, reminded me, and this doesn't have anything to do necessarily with blindness, but I happen to have two grandchildren, and one of them is three, and she's a little girl, and both of them are rather bright. And the other day, she called her Nana, who is my ex, her grandmother, she called her a dum-dum. And I'm thinking, well, Where did that come from? Well, Pam reminded me that it came from our house. And we have to be really careful about what we say because they pick them up. And in this case, it has to do with the car seat. I have a very difficult time getting buckling the car seat. They have this three-point harness in this thing, and I said, what dumb designed this? And, she just thought that was the perfect word. So her grandmother, who also couldn't do the car seat, she would just call her a dum-dum.
Unfortunately, it's another slur on another kind of disability.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it is.
We have a lot of them.
I'm going to be honest. I cannot live my life in political correctness. And I don't expect other people to live in political correctness. I will be offended from time to time at something someone says. And that's just life.
Yeah.
That's just life.
Well, it's something we all do, and it's unfortunate, but.
And, sorry, but that's just life.
You do your best.
Otherwise, we'll stand still and do nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that's wrong, too. I guess I'm wondering is there any real difference? I mean, here, I know several blind people, myself included, who are multilingual, and I'm wondering, I mean, what's the. I guess my first question, and I don't mean this harshly, but what's the big deal?
Okay, well, do you live in the country of the language that you speak?
I have been to the countries. I know people who have lived in the country.
Have you had to live in that country and go out and do your own shopping or go to the social services?
I certainly could in certain countries, yes.
Yeah, well, then you did very well. But there's two things. Number one, many of the people that we are working with are people who lost vision in their own country, and they never had any rehabilitation services, and then they come here, and there's a lot of barriers for them, and they have, whether or not they have read in their own country, they have very little access to materials that would help them, except things that have pictures and stuff like that. And they are overwhelmed by the immigration experience, which is often a refugee experience, whether or not they're identified as refugees. And that can be a very stressful experience. Most of them did not study languages in other countries and maybe have not had the educational experience that you have had. And if you went into your classroom and only had a book that was visually oriented, you might find it hard too. And if you had the experience that some of the people I know have had, who said, where they are told by the instructor, just listen. We don't know how to help you. Just listen. And, don't worry about reading and writing, which is one of the things that we're very devoted to teaching reading and writing. We're very devoted to literacy. Just listen, and maybe every once in a while I'll bring you something that you can touch, like a cup or something. Maybe it wouldn't be so easy for you. I know some immigrants and refugees who have learned and have even gone to college, and they have generally taken about 10 years, whereas the sighted immigrants and refugees take on average 7 years. I think it could be speeded up, and I think more of them could be helped to actually adjust and deal with the situation if they were given better opportunities that were more appropriate. I also happen to know that there are a lot of sighted immigrants and refugees who go to the programs in the community colleges and drop out because those programs are too difficult for them or they're irrelevant to what their needs are.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but
I just
think that's one of the things that anyone who travels from any country to any other country and lives there for any length of time deals with. And I'm not saying that that's wrong, but I'm saying I guess if you were teaching more culture, more of our culture, I'd be more interested in it. Because I think if a person is going to come to this country, I think they do need to adopt our culture, as we would need to adopt the country of the culture of a country that we would go to live in. Anyway, we'll never agree on that, and I just thank you for listening.
Yeah, people need to make a distinction between voluntary travel and forced immigration.
Well, I'm assuming that these people weren't brought here on slave ships.
Well, no, but I think what Robbie's saying, and forgive me if I'm putting words into your mouth, Robbie, but my interpretation anyway of what he's saying, Dave, is that there's a whole different kind of deal when you're here because you're traveling, it's a trip, or you're here because this is a new beginning and a new life. And there's a whole lot more urgency, I would think, in getting to know the word for the cup or the table or the understanding of the culture if you're really trying to start over. Then there would be if you were here for a month or three on a fellowship of some sort.
Well, also, let me finish what I was thinking.
I'll tell you what, let me hang up so somebody else can call in if they want to.
All right, great. Thanks,
okay,
Dave.
Thanks.
Give my best to Pam.
I'm
go ahead,
thinking
Robbie.
That even many fully sighted immigrants and refugees are suffering from trauma because they're coming from places where there's been wars or they themselves have been in camps for 10 years. And then on top of that, if a person has limited or no vision, that's an extra burden.
Yeah.
So it's not really analogous to talk about any chosen experience in another country to compare to that. The best you can imagine is, say, a 20-year-old person who comes here with his family or something like that. He does have, or she does have, a lot of opportunities, but it's really totally an alien world for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'll
yeah.
give you a quick example.
All right, and then we have another call.
I'm sorry.
Okay, let's bring the caller in first. Hi there. You are with Robbie, Sylvie, and Marlena. Who's this?
My name is Danny.
Hi, Danny.
Hey. I've got a question. You know, a lot of these business, a lot of big businesses and companies all over the place. You know, when they say press 1 for English and press 2 for Spanish. I'm sure that in some ways it makes it easier for people that come over here, but on the other hand, I think that generations gone by, you know, people came over here hundreds of years ago or even 50 years ago, they didn't have that. And so the children of immigrants had to assimilate. Some people argue that these changes are a good thing, and some people argue, well, it can kind of keep people from wanting to know it. Not, you know, in other words, it could provide incentive for people to not try to acquire English as their language in some cases. What are your views on that, since you work with people
okay.
that
as,
are...
As an immigrant, as a child of immigrants, I will respond.
Okay.
My parents came from Eastern Europe, my mother from Russia, my father from Siberia. He came from tribal people in Siberia. My mother began working in the factory at the age of 12. I have seen Chinese and Puerto Rican young women working in places that are very similar, and there are now a lot of others, to where my mother must have been going, and she never went to school. My father went to the sixth grade and dropped out because the teachers were hitting them when they spoke their first language. And I will tell you that at the turn of the century, there were actually more immigrants coming in, a higher percentage of immigrants. At the beginning of the 19th century, until World War I, there were many, many newspapers in different languages. And certainly in New York, Chicago, Detroit, and some parts of California, there were cities where people could go and hear lectures in their own language and could do many, many things. There have always been and continue to be self-help immigrant groups. And so it's not really true that there hasn't been this. The government didn't do it, but there has always been. And during World War I, there was a big crackdown on language on newspapers that had other languages because many of them were labor organization oriented newspapers, and social service organization newspaper, and most of them were shut down. They were very small. But beyond that, the studies show that it used to take, on average, three generations for the children to lose their first language and become fully, deeply involved. And now it takes two generations. On average, immigrants are learning English and becoming oriented to American culture much more quickly than they used to. So
a lot of it has to do with television.
A lot of it
yeah,
has to do with television,
I'm sure,
and radio. And there's, you know, a lot of people want to get jobs and want to get better jobs, and there's a lot of emphasis on that. However, I just want to give you one quick little story, and I could tell you many like this. One man that we worked with comes from Vietnam, was in the Vietnamese military in South Vietnam, as were many of his family members. After the war, he was sent to a labor camp for 1 year, but then sent home to die. His relatives, some of them stayed there for 7 years, and they were able to immigrate to the United States after they came out. I guess it's 8 years, because the government said that they would take Vietnamese military immigrants if they had been in the labor camp. It's either 7 or 8 years, I remember. But the student that we worked with had only been in for 1 year, but he was very sick after that. He had to wait for something like 12 years before he could immigrate, in terms of, you know, coming as part of family reunification. And by then he was totally blind, and he was quite sick from his experience, and he couldn't get a job because the North Vietnamese government that took over the whole country didn't trust him. He did a lot of street peddling and things like that. This man was very interested and now has become very much an English speaker. But think about how this would be for you learning a lot of new things. We know that it's stressful moving to a new city when you do it in a
right,
house way.
Right, trying to find that bus stop can be a killer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you
yeah,
have to, and the question is, how do you learn the new orientation skills and the new
right,
other skills that you need when you're going through all this stress plus you have, you know,
right,
you have to learn the new language.
Well, thanks, Danny.
Okay. One quick question.
Okay.
I'll hang up
okay,
for
real
the
quick,
answer.
Okay.
I am very much interested in the idea of Esperanto. And somehow, maybe it wouldn't work in this country, but I feel for world communication, if some of us could all learn Esperanto, it would put both parties on an equal footing.
All right. Great.
All right. I'll let you go.
Thanks, Danny. Bye-bye. Yeah, Esperanto, now, isn't that a universal language?
Yeah, it's a constructed language that it's mostly based on Latin languages, like French, Spanish, and Italian, but has some English words and some Scandinavian words and things.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's not quite as popular as it used to be, but it has a lot of promise.
Yeah, but a lot of the people who are from Asia don't find it as easy as the people who speak the Latin-based languages.
Hmm. Interesting. I just want to pop in here and say that in the second hour, we will be in open forum. And so if you've called in the first hour, you may call in the second hour if you wish, because we will be in open forum. Also, if you're listening to this program at any time other than 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific in that hour, you're listening to a replay. So we want you to sit down, put your feet up, and enjoy the show. You can feel free to email me at Marlena, MARLAINA, at acbradio.org if you have any suggestions for future programs. I'd like to go back to some information I was reading on your website, your participation with the AFB, American Foundation for the Blind, Braille Literacy folks in Atlanta, Ike Presley. I'm sure you probably hooked up with Ike and folks there. What did the Kaizen program do with AFB and the Braille Literacy?
We were part of a national initiative that they had called Bridging the Gap, where they took 100 professionals and trained them to be trainers of other people with respect to literacy for Braille and large print. And within that, we specialized in English as a second language.
Right. Part of the reason that we became involved with that is we began realizing fairly early on that because we do intensive teaching, that it was important for us to be able to reach out and train other people how to help these students. And we wanted to learn how to become better trainers, which this helped us. This was called Train the Trainer Initiative. And we went through the intensive workshop. And then we were also involved in the symposium in 2002, and we did a paper and we did a presentation. And we were involved in the summit in 2003, where we participated actively in making the accessible test work group go forward. The American Printing House for the Blind People were the primary hosts of that, and that they, but we contributed our knowledge of how to make tests fully accessible to adults. A lot of their experience was with children, whereas we had been helping to adapt adult basic education tests a whole lot. And then we also did our own workshop on talking about how to teach English as a new language. So we did that. We were also involved in their ongoing work of the American Foundation for the Blind Accessible Text Work Group, including through teleconferences and participating in the final position statement. And from that, a few things came also. One is we have been advocating for accessible citizenship tests. We prepare students to become citizens, which is partly teaching them English as a new language and partially teaching them about civics, teaching them about American history and things like that, to go through what is currently an interview process. And we also prepare materials in fully accessible formats for students, and then we also have given them to people who aren't our own students, but other people are helping. And I guess it's in, I don't remember, 2004, I found out that the United States government was going to redesign the process to make the citizenship test a standardized test format. And by the description, I was very concerned that it would be very graphically oriented for a lot of basic students and that that would not be fully accessible to blind and low vision people. And some people may remember that part of what we did was draw up a letter asking for support from various advocacy organizations, and there was a resolution passed at the American Council for the Blind conference, National Conference in 2004, supporting that. And I've continued to work on that, although that's going very slowly. I don't actually know. It's in great confusion. But we also have been working with commercial standardized test developers because they have been given the task of developing standardized tests for basic education for fully sighted students for the funding of their program. And if blind people are to participate in those programs after they have developed all the basic adaptive skills necessary, they need to be able to take those tests in ways that are fair and have the tests accessible. And one of the problems, like in this state, is we found there that a lot of the basic assessment tests that the fully sighted students were being given were just not at all, even just putting them into Braille is not enough because they're very picture and graphically oriented maps, pictures, not at all accessible. And so we had some practice working on some of the tests in Washington State, and now we're trying to do that for the commercial tests that are being developed, because what was happening was that if the students couldn't do the standardized test that was being given in the programs, they would be given like a sort of watered-down test, and then the program would mark them down as a zero, which meant that if a funder wanted test scores, they wouldn't be funding those students. So that discouraged them from even wanting to know how to help those students, say, you know, this is just an extra burden for us.
Sure.
So that's one of the reasons that I'm really trying to do that, although I am not enthusiastic about a lot of those test things. But that's part of, you know, what we did. Then there's one other component to this, and that is in 2003 we prepared and presented a six-session series for an Extending the Bridge mini-grant from the American Foundation for the Blind, and that was for both rehab professionals in the blindness field and for basic education, English as a new language teachers, to come and get some better ideas. We know that that isn't going to solve the whole thing, but they were 2.5 hours each, and that we did that. We thought it went very well, and we had some interactive stuff.
Do students pay for your program?
No. It's entirely free to students. We try to get organizations that have budgets to pay, and some have, and in our joint project with the mainstream program here in Seattle, we get some pay, but we've gotten some pay back from the American Foundation for the Blind. But this is the big issue. No, you know, everybody thinks it's a good idea, but we're asking for donations. We're a very small program, and we're asking for individual donations, group donations, do a benefit for us or whatever, because we have, you know, we do not want to ever charge students. The Washington Council of the Blind gave us money for Braille writers, which we give students, and we give them paper. Not only don't we charge them, but we give them Braille writers, we give them paper, if they need it, we will give them a basic tape recorder. They can get something from the Library of Congress, but not for recording. And
right.
We try to
right.
record lessons, and we provide them with tapes. And there's just we've gotten maps to work on the geography and some things for math. And, you know, there's a lot of maintenance.
So while you're talking on that subject, I'd like to give our email address out.
Yes, I was going to ask you that, and I was also going to ask you if Robbie, maybe you can kind of do both of these things. If people have donations in kind, you know, maybe they don't have dollars, but maybe they have a tape recorder, maybe they have a second Braille writer, are those things acceptable to Kaizen?
If a Braille writer in good working condition is very useful, sometimes we have gotten them where we had to pay money to repair them, to make
sure.
them usable, and right now we actually don't have extra money to repair them. So I would say workable ones are very desirable. But if people could either do fundraisers or get their organizations to make grants to Kaizen for our what we're calling capacity building campaign, this is basically to enable us to continue to do consultations and trainings. We think it's very important because it kind of leverages the amount of work that we as two people can do.
We're a 501c3 organization.
Yeah, it's all tax deductible if somebody wants to give an individual contribution or if an organization wants to give a contribution. So I'll give our email is Kaizen is KAIZEN_ESL at LiteracyNet. It's one word, LiteracyNet .org. Kaizen_ESL at LiteracyNet.org. If they write to us or if they can, our information is on that, you know, is on our website too, but probably writing to us is the easiest way to get in touch, and that way we can make contact.
And why don't you give out your website address?
Okay, the website is www.nwlincs.org. /KAIZEN. And that is sponsored by the National Institute for Literacy, that site. So it's www.nwlincs/KAIZEN.
Is it lincs.org/?
Oh, right, it is. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
nwlincs.org/KAIZEN.
Okay, great. Well, I so appreciate that you both joined me. We had the fortune of actually meeting in person last night at an event, and I was just delighted to meet you both, being a Seattle resident and someone who's very involved with the Washington Council of the Blind. I've certainly heard of you and heard of Kaizen, even though I didn't pronounce it correctly, and knew a bit about what you were doing, and I'd like to extend an invitation to you to come back in a few months and kind of give us an update. And I'd like to extend a challenge to each of my listeners to say, you know, look around you. And if you've got something that you could donate that would be of value, certainly money is a good thing. But if you can't do that and you've got something that you could donate, a working Braille writer, a working cassette recorder, something of value to people who have so little would be greatly appreciated.
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you for that statement, because that could be helpful. Every little bit does help.
Well, I look forward to having you guys on again soon.
We'll be glad to be on again. Thanks a lot, Marlena.
All right, have a great night.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Je t'aime, t'es amour, ya tu viens, ya mieux. I need your heaven of heart. I love you. The sounds are all as different as the lands from which they came. And though our words are all unique, our hearts are still the same. Love in any language, straight from the heart.
Straight from the
my friend Jenny Emery from, well, now from Illinois, formerly from Canada, from her CD, Leading You Home, and it's called Love in Any Language. I don't know about any of you, but I was pretty moved by the dedication of my guests in the last hour. We have a call. Hi there, you're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hey, this is Danny.
Hey, Danny.
Hey, I'm glad you had those people on, because these are things that we need to think about.
And, yep.
You know, people coming over here and taking so many risks.
Yep, and coming often with nothing.
That's very true. Hey, I just wanted to give you a very, very quick piece of information about Esperanto.
All righty.
I'm beginning to learn Esperanto, and
are you?
It's I'm taking an email course, and what the gist of it is, it's a constructed language. It's extremely regular, and you can tell by the ending of the word whether it's a noun, a verb, or whatever it is. I won't go into all that, but it's for example, the nouns all end in O, all A's, the words ending in A are adjectives, and so forth and so on.
Oh, my gosh, so I'd be an adjective.
No, you, well...
My probably,
I don't know what... You'd probably change the name just a little. But anyway, the whole thing of it is that... it's very regular, and it's fairly easy, comparatively speaking. I tried to take Spanish... And I just, I think the only real way to do it is to immerse myself in the culture and do it that way. But I, you know, every language has its exceptions, but Esperanto doesn't seem to.
Huh. So how do you say, hello, my name is Danny?
Saludon, mia nomo estas Danny.
Hmm. So I hear Italian, I hear Spanish.
There's even clues from French because, for example, the word to eat, M-A-N-G with an accent, you know, it's written as G-X without, if you don't have the accent thing.
Mm-hmm.
A-S. By the way, the verbs are A-S, I-S, and O-S, depending on if they're present, past, or future.
Mm-hmm.
Manjas is eat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you hear people, I think French to eat is either manger or manger.
Oui, mange.
And so
mange.
There's little bits and pieces, the numbers.
And in Italian, it's mangia.
Huh. Because in Spanish, it's interesting that the verb is comer.
Huh.
So I don't know why that's different. But anyway, you know, the numbers, uno, two, three, no, uno, two, three, quar, quin, ses, sept, sep, hoc, no, deck, you know, I don't know them all, but.
Yeah, interesting.
But go ahead.
That's, no, very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. What I was wanting to call about was I was wanting to communicate with somebody that would be a lot more knowledgeable than I about this subject. And I'm just wondering if there are any people that know about Esperanto Braille out there, or whatever, or that use Esperanto at all, you know, be it in correspondence or whatever. If anyone does, they are welcome to write me, and I'm going to give my email address.
Okay.
And I ask you to write me in English for now because I'm so new at this. Here we go.
That's good.
Danny Boy. That's DannyBoy at MyFreedomBox. That's all written as if it were one word. DannyBoy at MyFreedomBox.com. I have one more thing to say, and I'll cut you loose.
Okay.
If anybody has any information at all on the Nemeth Universal Braille System, or what I call it, NUBS, I would welcome your email as well, because I feel that this could be a very good system. I don't care for the what do they call it, the unified Braille code.
The UBC.
At all. I just don't.
Okay.
But anyway, that's a whole different subject, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. But
well, we may have to do a program on that, actually. Get some. That's a really good idea. Get some proponents of each and bring them on and let them duke them out.
Yeah, again, if anybody has any information on either one of those things, anyone is quite welcome to write me.
All right.
And by the way, I hope that email that I sent you could be of help to you.
Which...
I sent you an email about preventing fraud.
Okay. You sent that today, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you told me because I thought it was spam. I didn't recognize it as coming from you. So I will go in and retrieve it.
All right. If you need me to send it again, I will.
And you know, if you wouldn't mind, that would be better.
I could put a little note that this is, that I had listened to your show, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that's fine. Just go ahead and resend it, and I'll know to look for it.
That'll be done. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Danny. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 866. Well, my mic is making all kinds of noises tonight. I don't know what's going on. We're getting close to Halloween. Maybe we've got ghosts and goblins in here. 866-666-7926. How the heck have you guys been? My goodness, it seems like it's been a long time since I've been around. Hey there, this is Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, Marlena. It's Joe calling back.
Hello, Joe calling back.
How are you?
Did you change your last name? You're now Joe calling back.
Yeah, well, you had that last name once.
I know.
But I think it was on another show.
I think so.
This is Joe Hartz from Michigan. I wanted to kind of continue and share a few anecdotes of why the previous program is so important, and perhaps they're a little bit touching as well. Some of them are humorous. Some are a little bit tragic, but with triumph. Recently, over the last few years, I've come to know several blind refugees, both as a student and as a student teacher. And as a matter of fact, one lady who's about my age, I'm 52, was blinded in the 1967 war, and recently, within the last 10 years, came to America. And we're friends to this day. She's a Palestinian Christian from just outside of Ramallah in a little city called Taibe, and taught me all the Arabic that I probably shouldn't know. I should say I hope to call you my Siddiqui, which is the female version of a friend. And the other young gentleman, tremendously talented young fellow, who's going to college now, he was actually blinded again in war. He's from southern Lebanon and has taught me a very cultural person, very talented in all kinds of fields. Both of these people, their English, while they thought it was a problem, are multilingual, in both of them, from different perspectives, had more difficulty with acculturation, particularly the lady from Palestine, in which blinded people were considered to some people to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
too much custodialization. The third person is really the most remarkable and heartwarming story. And there's a funny thing that I'd like to close with related to the idiom discussion or the slang. She was a lady who lived through the siege of Sarajevo as a young teen, and tremendous bombardment. Her father was Muslim, her mother was Christian, and it was just a part of that horrendous ethnic cleansing They eventually did escape to Germany. Again, she's tremendously talented, and she knows several languages. Her English is actually accent-free and flawless, but the humorous situations came around idioms. We were both students together, and her Braille was much more advanced than mine, and we were in the same Braille class, and she was helping me out. And she announced in quite a boisterous voice at lunch, being very proud of herself, which she should have been, Joe took advantage of me in Braille class today. She was kind of an attractive lady, but there was about 7 years age difference, and I didn't really kind of want to get that going around.
That's funny.
She also made brownies for the first time and shared them with the blind counselor, and he said, man, that really hit the spot. About an hour later, she came up to me and she goes, what did I do to offend John? What is this hit the spot thing?
Yeah, I once knew some young girls from Vietnam, and I got a phone call, and one of these girls picked up the phone and said, oh, just a minute, I'll get her. She's in my pocket. I kind of like the idea of somebody thinking I'm small enough to fit in their pocket, but...
You betcha. That's actually a compliment.
Yeah.
The final thing with this young lady from Bosnia is we went to a baseball game, a minor league game, and she was sitting rather close, and she was just shaking, you know, through the whole game. Finally I asked her, what's making you so nervous? And she goes, she related in detail being under the siege, which was kind of like living through the Blitz.
Mm-hmm.
You never knew where an artillery shell was just going to come down on you. And there were going to be fireworks after the game.
And she said, but
I must be brave.
Yeah.
This kind of goes to some of the comments made by Dave and some of the other discussion. People are here not only with dealing with blindness and dealing with language, but with tremendous other baggage, shall we say, from refugee status. And I have nothing but the utmost admiration for these three people from all their different perspectives at how tremendously remarkable they are. And I'll leave you with that because I'm a tough guy. I actually get pretty sentimental. Just even thinking of this and their achievements, it just makes what Robbie and Sylvia are doing all the more important.
Well, yes, and I really hope that we'll all look around us and see in what way, if any way, can we help Robbie and Sylvia to continue. So I
appreciate you, my friend.
I appreciate your call.
My siddiqui, assalamu alaikum, eh?
Righto!
And shalom alaikum.
Now that I understand.
It's the same thing. Take care,
all right.
My friend.
Thanks, Joe. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. I apologize for all this bumping around tonight. Man, we got to get Gary the board guy in here and fix it. Something's not right. Something's off of its rocker besides me. Oh, my goodness. Here's another call. Hi there. This is Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, it's Dave again.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, I just had a couple of quick things that I wanted to call. Interesting program, by the way.
Thank you.
And a couple of things. basically from a couple of weeks ago, or the last time you were on, I think, or maybe it was, I know you were talking about the purchasing product and how people just needed to, you know, suck up and purchase them. I don't necessarily disagree with you on that, but I'm wondering this. Why is it that we as blind people, we accept, and by the way, I'm sorry, I'm a blind person. I'm not a person who is blind. We can argue that point, too, if you like. Why do we take a lesser stance than the rest of the disability community? And let me point out two ways that we probably do, and then, you know, I'd like you to respond. One is, in terms of the purchase of equipment, obviously, you know, the high-dollar stuff is out there, and that's all very nice, but, you know, a person, and I, you know, any other, you know, persons with other disabilities that have things that they need to make their lives better, are able to get them through, I don't know, Medicare, Medi-Cal, in our case. I'm thinking of scooters even for seniors. I've seen some seniors out there, and they've got, you know, they get these $5,000 scooters. And, you know, again, I say this, I'm not, I don't wish that they didn't have them or anything. I'm not
right,
saying that.
Right.
But they do, and yet we are expected to fend for ourselves. Another issue that has kind of bothered me, and I've only thought about this because I don't think anybody's ever brought it up. In terms of paratransit, there's been a lot of discussion, as you know, on the list of late about paratransit. And, you know, should we or should we not be eligible and that sort of thing, okay? And one of the things that is brought up as to or whether a person is eligible, of course, is can one walk by 200 feet or whatever. And that's, you know, regardless of what the terrain is or what street might be in between the two. Can you walk 200 feet? Yes, yes. Okay, you're not eligible. Now, a person in a wheelchair, and again, I'm not taking this away from them. I don't want to do that. But they have a choice. They can either use a fixed route bus normally, or they can use paratransit. That choice is not available to a blind person if, in fact, a blind person wants to tell the truth about their, you know, abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we let those things happen?
Well, let me respond to the first.
I think they both are the same, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah.
I think
first of all, you won't find too many blind people arguing with you about the fact that our equipment should be considered as, you know, a durable medical equipment, and that, sorry, I have a cold, so I'm sort of clearing my throat here. And that, in fact, yes, it should be covered under Social Security, Medicare. And I know that in the past, when I've been at ACB leadership training seminars, that this has been an issue that we have taken to the Hill. Now, why that hasn't happened, you know, only God knows. I don't. But I don't think that it's really true that we sort of settle for that. I think there are advocates who are working to try to bring this about and have been doing so for some time. And your question is a great one because it reminds me that this summer at ACB convention in Las Vegas, I actually met one of the disability DREDF, Disability Rights Education Defense Fund attorneys, and someone else, and I think Day Al Mohammed, who are working with some of the Social Security stuff, and I need to bring them on this program. And your question reminds me that I want to do that. And when I do, I hope that you will call them and pose this question to them. What's going on with this?
Yeah, I think we need to have an either all or none situation. You know, if we're all stuck with paying it, then, you know, then, well, here we are, you know, but we're not. And I think we've been, as blind people, we've been second class for far, far too long, and I think that needs to that needs to come to an end.
Yeah, and as far as the paratransit thing, we actually don't, we're not very far apart on that one either. I do see that there are times when, okay, for example, right out here at the end of our street, our bus stop is not considered by our transit service to be an accessible bus stop. I don't know if it's the hill or the grading or whatever it is. They will not deploy the lift at our stop. So if Gary wants to, at our stop coming from Seattle, so if he wants to go to Seattle, he can take the bus to Seattle, but he can't take the bus coming home because he'd be like Gary on the MTA, you know, never return. However,
Charlie, not Gary.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Gary's your husband. Charlie's
well, you
the
know,
MTA guy.
I get them all mixed up. You know, it's I'm getting old. But
do you have that many?
I do.
Oh,
I
that's
tell
disgusting.
You. I
Gary.
I know it. Where's Gary the board guy? But I also see a very convincing case for blind people, particularly if there is a question, and I know the ADA is not a safety law, and you can't ever, I don't think, in my opinion, and I got yelled at for saying this once on the ACBL, but I don't think you can ever win this argument by using safety.
No, I don't think you can.
I mean, I got shot down there.
It would be nice if you could, but I don't think
yeah,
you can.
Yeah, because it's not a safety law. It's an access law. And so when access to where you need to go is impeded either by ridiculous traffic patterns or whatever it may be, even a driver not calling the stops, blind people have every right to use that resource, in my opinion.
We really have got to revisit our traffic issues. I don't know if you've, there's been a lot of talk on the list over the last couple of weeks. I don't know if you've heard about a poor woman whose guide dog was killed
yes,
and she was
yes.
injured in North Carolina.
Yes.
And,
yes.
you know, this happens far, far too frequently, and we're too quiet about it. We really need to, you know, it's all very nice to have White Cane Safety Day, but you know, we need to learn how to be militant. This is something where I think, you know, we can learn from the NFB. We need to start militant action in terms of our rights to the streets, and if we don't, we will lose.
Well, I'm particularly...
With that, I will leave you.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Dave makes some good points, and I'm particularly concerned about these hybrid cars. You can't hear them. You cannot hear them. I read an article recently where actually someone in the NFB tried to, and I apologize to this lady, I don't remember her name or where she was, but I believe she is one of the state NFB presidents, and she was quoted in an article, and she said, you know, I told my neighbor to drive by me, you know, I was sure I could hear when the car was coming, and she said after I waited and waited and waited, finally I said, well, aren't you going to drive by me? And the guy had driven by her three times. Hi there, this is Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, it's Debbie Hazelton.
Hi, Debbie Hazelton. How are you?
Good.
What's going on with you?
Well, I'm enjoying your show.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying my show, too.
Good.
I like it when it works out that way, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. The thing about language, there was... In my interview that's on my podcast that I just put up today, the woman who does laughter therapy went to Russia to learn to clown. She went with, I think she went to Russia with Patch Adams, actually.
Oh, what a wonderful, now I'd love to get Patch Adams on my show.
Oh, wouldn't that be fabulous?
Oh, golly, that would be fabulous.
And one of the things that I had asked her about was the language barrier, because she, you know, she went there not knowing Russian, and she said that there was this one interchange or exchange that she had with a woman where the woman grabbed her by the hand and took her into a room and just showed her a box full of pictures about her life, of just many, many memories. And Gail, who did the interview, and this woman sat there and laughed and cried and just exchanged so many emotions without one word, because they didn't speak the same language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was just a very moving experience for my friend to go through. I mean, I think that would be. And there you go. There's the language of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And I too have had wonderful experiences with deaf-blind people, or, you know, people who maybe don't hear as well, but they're not necessarily totally deaf, but using the language of touch. I've had wonderful experiences with them. So,
well, yeah, and, you know, communication takes many, many forms. And, you know, I was just so impressed by what Robbie and Sylvie are trying to do. I mean, it's just two people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what a thing. But
yeah,
that's how it starts, you know? That's...
Well, and I was so glad to hear that all of that cultural kind of stuff comes in, because it's not just learning a language. It really is, you know, and so much more about not only culture, but understanding blindness and so many aspects that go with that.
Yeah.
So that was very good.
Yeah.
And to your last caller, Dave, and his comments, I for one am a person who, I'm a person first who happens to be blind second.
Me
and
too.
It's funny, because I said that and taught that in training seminars back in the late 70s, before that was ever in vogue.
Yeah,
and I feel
yeah.
real strongly about
yeah.
that, as far as educating other people that,
yeah.
you know, we're people first. And yet, to the comments, the questions that he raised, I mean, I certainly think that, yes, I don't know about militant, but I do think that we do need to stand up a whole lot more for our rights. And the paratransit issue, I definitely agree. And those hybrid cars, I had a car pull out of a driveway once and touch me on the leg, and I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
It was pretty spooky.
It's a scary thing. It's a scary thing. Yeah, I just to go backwards a little bit on the blind person or person who happens to be blind thing. I mean, for me personally, I'm a person who happens to be blind, but if you're a blind person, that's cool.
I hear that deaf people prefer to be considered deaf. They want to be recognized as a culture.
Yeah.
They don't want to be people who are deaf. They want to just be the deaf.
Yeah.
Period.
And see,
I don't like the phrase the blind.
I don't either. I would have got the blind what? The blind alley,
yeah.
the blind turn, the blind, you know, the duck blind, you know.
Yeah. The Venetian blind,
yeah. Am I a vertical one, or am I, you know? Am I an expensive one? I hope so.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Tell me about your podcast. How can people listen to it?
Well, let's see. They can subscribe if they have iPodder or whatever other podcast managing software. They can subscribe by pasting feeds.feedburner.com/... Debbie Hazelton's blog, or they can go to DebbieHazelton.com, and my blog is there, and the two podcasts I've done can be downloaded.
Well, I'm sure my podcatcher went out and caught your podcast today.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
I put one up this morning myself.
Good. I'm going to have to go get it.
Actually, it was at the request of a listener whose name is escaping me. I'm forgetting everything, but he wanted to know if there was a way to hear the replay of the Mitzi Friedlander interview I did those many years ago. And by golly, I had Mitzi in my little folder there, and I pulled her out, dusted her off, and shot her up on the internet. So
that's great. Yeah, I put it up this morning, and I actually downloaded it before I sent out my email to everyone to make sure.
To make sure it was really there.
It was,
Yeah. Well, I need to get you on my show here again sometime. We need to get into Bach flower essences and laughter therapy and and kind of what you're doing and the chair massage, the whole deal.
Oh, it'd be fun.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
I'll hit you up real soon.
Okay. Well, good to say hi.
All right. Well, you take care and thank you for listening.
Oh, you betcha. Thank
All right.
you for talking. Thank you for being there.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. She's a good friend, Debbie Hazelton. I spend some time with her on Skype this week. I'm such a Skype dummy. I don't know what I'm doing on Skype. You know, I'm I'm not one of these people that's, you know, got it all knocked together. You know, I'm on the thing and I'm chatting away with somebody and the phone rings and I get so nervous I don't know what to do and I usually cut somebody off, so... What can I say? But I am good at pushing these buttons. 866-666-7926. We were in Washington, D.C. last week and had the honor of participating by invitation to attend the memorial for Dr. Russell Smith, which was held at the home of the New Zealand ambassador. And the home of the New Zealand ambassador in itself is something to talk about. My goodness, it was quite a thing. Let's see who we've got. Hi there, this is Marlena. Who's this?
Hello there, how are you today?
Hi there, Timothy. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. I'm glad to hear you back on the air.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be back. How's the weather up there in Nova Scotia?
Wonderful after a very unusual bad weekend. We had some very rainy weekends, the last two weekends.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
I'm hoping next weekend is going to be even better because my birthday is next Sunday.
I know your birthday is next Sunday. I got your email, and hopefully we'll be doing a show next Sunday, so you'll have to call in so we can wish you a happy birthday.
Cool.
All right?
Yep.
All right. Well, you have a great week.
You too.
Thanks for checking in.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. That's Timothy up there in Nova Scotia. There's a great song. I'm sure there are many great songs about Nova Scotia, but one of them, boy, would I give a lot to have it. All you old folkies, attention, ding, 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 ding. I need my bell in here. I used to have a bell when I was on ACB Radio Interactive, and I'd ring it for new callers, and I'd ring it for all kinds of things, so I need to get my bell going in here. But anyway, great song. It was sung by Bonnie Dobson, who was a Canadian folk artist in the 60s, and the name of the song was Peter Amberley. My name is Peter Amberley. I'll tell you something, something. I was born on Prince Edward Island. Oh, it's just, it's a wonderful song. Anyway, enough of that. And back to the home of the New Zealand ambassador and the Russell Smith Memorial. The home, what we saw of it, which, of course, they had the entire lower level opened out so that we could stroll around through the garden and through the halls and the patio and so on, was absolutely beautiful. The ambassador, Ambassador Wood and his wife were just gracious hosts and hostess, to us. They served wonderful New Zealand wine and lovely hors d'oeuvres and spring lamb from New Zealand. And they had some dessert things, but I was very good and didn't partake of that. The service itself was just great. There were staff, of course, from Humanware New Zealand and Humanware Canada and Humanware U.S., and one of the very touching things that happened is that Jim Halliday, a name that many, many of us know from Humanware and way back in the telesensory days in the 70s, Jim Halliday is quite an accomplished pianist, and he wrote a piece to remember his good friend Russell by. And that piece incorporates itself with the Pachelbel canon. And boy, it was, oh, it just gave me goosebumps. Jim played that for us at the service, and it really, really gave me goosebumps. Jonathan Mosen was there, another name that, of course, anyone who's listened to ACB Radio for more than a minute knows, and who is involved with Braille Note would know and listens to the Mosen Explosion show would know. And Jonathan gave a very moving presentation, sort of talking about what adaptive technology has meant to him as an individual, and then branching out and talking about some of the people whom he has had the fortune to know in his work, and how much the adaptive technology that Dr. Russell Smith worked with, believed in, and so forth, has changed the lives of people who are blind. And he basically thanked Russell for having the vision that he had. And then we kind of did some hobnobbing around afterwards. I saw my good friend Larry Lewis and saw some folks from Kurzweil and, gosh, I don't know, there's just lots of folks there. And, it was a good event. I was very honored to have been invited, and, hope that my sharing it with you kind of brings you some of that feeling about it as well. 866-666-7926. It's about 43 minutes past, give or take. We've got another 15 or so to go. And, you know, we never can sort of start right at or end right at a given time. That's the way the internet works. So we just kind of kick back, and this isn't Eastern time or Pacific time or Central time. It's, Marlena time. So, kick back with us. Give us a call. I, want to bring you up to date a little bit on, the house. Oh my goodness. The house is almost really, really, really almost done. We, today our contractor installed our outdoor heater so we can sit out on this great enclosed screened in porch with the clear UV stabilized roof. And when the wind gets, or when the weather gets chilly, we can turn on the heater. Stay out there a little longer. Oh, my, my. So that's done, and just waiting for a few more shelves and a few more doors in the, my goodness, what's going on here? A few more shelves, a few more doors in the kitchen, and then we'll be all set with that. So we're glad about that. Next week, we're going to try to be here, but I don't know for sure, if we will be. Gary, the board guy, and I have, got to go up to Montana this week for a business trip, and we're leaving very early tomorrow morning, and we'll get back very late Saturday night. So, if I don't have a guest lined up by the time I leave, it's unlikely that I'll be here next Sunday. But if I do, then absolutely we will be here next week. And after that, I am looking forward to bringing on the folks from the Social Security discussion that I shared with Dave, so we can look forward to that. I also am trying to schedule some time with Lainey Feingold, the attorney who helps create accessible ATMs with banks across the country and various ACB affiliates. So would like to do kind of a mini-series on advocacy. So look for that as well. I think what we're going to do here, because my throat is just giving me a troublesome thing, I'm going to go back into my music folder here for a second. And I always get such positive response from you guys when I play something by Jenny Emery. And so I think I'm gonna go ahead and bring Jenny back and play perhaps another song from her CD Leading You Home that might fit in with tonight's program.
Deep in the night, the winds blow cold. And in a heartbeat, the fear takes hold. Deep in the storm, there's a place that's soft and still, where the road waits to be taken, if you only will. The voices inside you can lead your soul astray. Believe in what you dream. Don't turn away, don't you turn away. Reach for the light, you might touch the sky. Stand on the mountaintop and see yourself fly. Capture a star, come out of the darkness and find out who you are. Somewhere in time, the truth shines through, and the spirit knows what it has to do. Somewhere in you, there's a power with no name. It can rise to meet the moment and burn like a flame. And you can be stronger than any fear you know. Hold on to what you see. Don't let it go. Don't you let it go. Reach for the light. You might touch the sky. Stand on the mountaintop and see yourself flying. Reach for the light to capture a star. Come out of the darkness and find out who you are. Now there's no turning back when your destiny's calling. Listen to the thunder roll and let your heart break free. The sky.
that doesn't get you going, if that doesn't get you going, nothing will. That's Jenny Emery and Reach for the Light from her CD, Leading You Home. And I'm very excited to say that Jenny shares my birthday. So I'm oh, it was very funny when I first met Jenny, and we somehow, who knows how, we said, well, she said, when's your birthday? And I said, October 2nd. She said, are you sure? I said, well, no, let me check. But I happen to be involved right now in an endeavor in my own personal life that has challenged me to look inward and to reach for that light and really believe that what I am doing in this endeavor, not only that it will succeed, but that it, the time is now and it is right. And I continually remind myself to reach for that light. And, you know, I think without sounding like I'm sermonizing here, and forgive me if it sounds this way, because that is not my intent at all. But I think that sometimes as blind people, people who are blind, whatever you want to say, as people of difference, life is harder for us. And that's a fact, that there are things that are just flat harder. Whether it's fair or not, who knows? But there's stuff that's harder. And I was listening to a very interesting podcast the other day, dealing with channeling your thoughts and your energy. And what this gentleman said is, don't say not when you, you know, if you're on a diet, don't say, I don't want to be fat. Say, I want to be thinner. Or because the mind can't conceive of not. And so what it does is it focuses on, in the instance of, let's say, I do not want to be fat. It focuses on, I want to be fat. Now, I'm not, you know, I don't know. I mean, this is just someone else's theory that I'm sharing. But I do think that it is human nature. Anytime something is hard, we get bogged down in it and we think about it and we focus on it and, oh my God, this is so hard, or this isn't fair, or why should we have to do this when other people can do that? And instead of turning some of that thought process around to a more positive context. And I guess I'm just crazy enough to believe that if enough of us think in positive terms, not that life is great and, you know, it's all a great Pollyanna thing, but if enough of us think with a positive foundation whenever we can, that's going to create some energy, and it's going to start making some differences, and it's going to start helping us see that light and reach for that light and grab on and make things happen. I don't know. Or then I could be crazy. 866-666-7926. We're just maybe 3 minutes away from shutting down for this week. As I said, we'll be going up, Gary the Board Guy and Madeline the Guide Dog, and I'll be going to Bozeman, Montana this week for the Northwest AER Regional Conference, doing some dealer demo stuff up there, and gonna take us a couple of days to get there and a couple of days to get back, by golly. So we'll pretty much be gone for the whole week, but I will be emailable at Marlena, MARLAINA, at acbradio.org. And would love your comments and your thoughts. And certainly if you've got any ideas for programming, I really want this to be your show, not just something that I come in here and sit down in the chair and do once a week and throw it at you and say, here it is, you know, take it or leave it. I don't ever want this program to be that. And so I need you. I need your help. I need you to help me make connections with interesting people. They don't have to be blind. They don't even have to be doing something that touches blindness. If it interests you, it probably interests other listeners. So would love to get your help with that. And if you yourself are someone who is doing something interesting, let me know about it. And we'll definitely look at bringing you on the air, giving you an opportunity to talk about what you're doing, much like what Sylvie and Robbie did earlier tonight. And again, before we close, I do want to ask you, look around you. What have you got that you don't need that might help Robbie Barnes and Sylvie Cashton with their program? Whether it's $5 or five cassettes or a cassette recorder or maybe a Brailler in good working order that you just don't need anymore. Think about them, if you would, and let them make use of your kind generosity. Well, I guess that about wraps it up tonight, and that's probably a really good thing because my throat is about ready to give out. So I will try to be here next week. I hope you will, too. Look for the announcement. I usually get it out on the day of the show. So look for the announcement. By the way, I am hoping to hear from Ronnie Millsap. I have sent him a note. Sometimes it takes him several weeks to contact me, but he did say he'd come on in the fall, and by golly, it looks like the fall to me, so we'll see if we can't get him back with us as well. So until we're together again, you guys take care, and please be safe and be kind to each other. You've been listening to Marlena on ACB Radio. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. But in the meantime, if you've got an idea for a future show, why not drop me an email? The email address is Marlena, that's M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, at acbradio.org. Thanks to Dave Williams, director of ACB Radio, and most of all, thanks to you, the listener. See you next week.